Hi, this is Newt. 2020 is going to be one of the most extraordinary election years of our lifetime. I want to invite you to join my inner circle as we discuss each twist and turn in the race in my members-only Inner Circle Club. You will receive special flash briefings, online events, and members-only audio reports from me and my team. Here's a special offer to my podcast listeners. If you join the Inner Circle today at newtsinnercircle.com and sign up for a 1 or 2 year membership, I'll send you a free, personally autographed copy of my book, Gettysburg, and a VIP fast pass to my live events. Join my Inner Circle today at newtsinnercircle.com. Use the code FREEBOOK at checkout. Sign up today at newtsinnercircle.com, code FREEBOOK. This offer ends January 31st. On this episode of Newt's World, we begin our three-part series about China, starting with a look at how Chinese companies are trading on U.S. stock exchanges. But is their market value really what they say it is? My guest today will tell you about their experiences investing in these Chinese companies and about their inflated valuations and the shell game they are playing on American investors. I'm pleased to introduce my guest, Dan David, founder and CEO of Wolfpack Research, and Ray Snader, an American investor who lost part of his retirement savings on Chinese investments. This is China's con game. May the buyer beware. As I understand it, you grew up in Flint, Michigan.
I did. Very proud of that.
How did that experience affect your thinking and the way in which you approach this whole issue of China?
I grew up very middle class, General Motors, Flint, Michigan. People work in the shop. People are honest. These are salt of the earth people to me. I still go back there every year. It's a very sad situation economically, but just some of the best people in the country. And my outlook is that we all take care of each other.
Dan, if you don't mind, I'd like to sort of start at the beginning. What's your investment background?
In mid-2000s, I joined forces with somebody with an investment background, and we started Geo Investing, which was basically a website that provided content on certainly underfollowed stocks. As a, for instance, once you're below a certain market cap, it was very hard to find information about these companies in the mid-2000s. It was all on the long side. We never shorted anything or had any kind of idea to short anything. It was never in our calculus. And 2008 came along, and that was certainly an event that affected all of us. And we were really taken back in those last 2 months and decided that our investment philosophy worked. It was value investing. It worked for 20 years, and we would stay with that. And in that scenario, value investing took us to China, because when we started to compare 2009, any of the companies that were going to grow their revenues by 50 or 100% or were going to become more profitable by the same margins, it largely took us to China. And we had 80% left of our portfolio we put into China, and we picked up 229% in 2009. And we just thought we were very smart guys. Around 2010, people started to come out and say, some of the companies that we had invested in were frauds. And even though we had exited some of those positions and made money, my partner and I got together and said, look, we're either smart or we were lucky. And lucky is no way to invest. So let's go prove these people wrong. These companies are listed on the U.S. stock exchange. Yes, they're based in China. But if they're listed on the U.S. exchange, they have to be valid because they're audited. They're beholden to the SEC and our rules and our listing standards on the NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange, so they have to be wrong. We hired our own due diligence team and sent them to look at 30 companies in China and come back and tell us what you see. And after 2 months, they came back and said, the short sellers are wrong. They're understating the problem. Every one of these 30 companies were frauds.
Every one of them?
All 30 out of 30 that we had them look at were fraudulent companies. At any given day, a factory's not running at all. There's nobody there. And then you see us in our time-lapse surveillance. One day, lights start to come on. The next day, smoke start coming out of the smokestacks. The next day, some employees start milling around. And then on the fourth day, two busloads of American investors get off the bus, take a tour of the factory, finish their tour, leave, factory shuts down. We went to the New York Stock Exchange, we went to NASDAQ, we went to the SEC, and we were telling them what we found. And when you're dealing with the SEC, of course, it's a one-way conversation, so we never knew what they were doing. But the exchanges were dismissive. They're like, who are you? Dan David. No, never heard of you. Why don't you get out of here? We went to the investment banks who were taking 10% of these transactions, right? So every time they raise money from American investors, call it $50 million or $100 million, they get 10% of this transaction. And they would always tell us that we vet these companies in China. We go look at them. We earn this 10%. It's not just paperwork. Okay. So we went to them and we said, look, you're getting it wrong. These are frauds. I'm sure you want a better product than this. Let us help you with your due diligence so that you're not putting these fraudulent companies on the U.S. exchanges. And they said to us, essentially, wait a minute. You want us to pay you to not list companies on the New York Stock Exchange and not get paid. So we're supposed to pay you and not get paid. Why don't you get out of here before we sue you? And this is a very frustrating thing.
Why weren't they interested in defending the American investor?
Because banks are not American banks. They're here for our laws and our protections, but they're beholden to shareholders. They're agnostic as to any kind of country loyalty, especially when you're talking Deutsche Bank or, you know, HSBC. I mean, what does HSBC stand for? Hong Kong, Shanghai, National Banking Corporation. I mean, they don't care. And Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, all the rest of them, they're the same.
Then what about the government agency, which is supposedly set up to care?
Well, the government agencies, to be fair, were just taken aback at the scale and the scope of the fraud. Like, it was just a fire hose to the face. And you couldn't believe that this was happening. And at some point, we figured out some things that were just incredible to be true at face value. Number one, it's not illegal for a Chinese citizen to steal from a U.S. citizen. So if these CEOs of these China-based companies listed on our exchange, and this answers your original question, who got the money? It'd be the CEO or the executives in China. They steal the money, and there's nothing we can do to them legally. Because once the money goes to China, there's no clawback provision either. So you can't put them in jail. You can't get the money back out of China. And investors are left with suing the shell of a company and getting paid out through directors and officers insurance, most of which a class action attorney is going to take 30% of. It's a mess.
There is a traditional Roman rule of caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. But you're suggesting that here, nothing you read actually is validatable because they're all basically built around fraud.
Well, we have that in the United States. To your point, if it's buyer beware, I'm notionally fine with that, although I do feel like we as professionals owe people who work fixing our cars or making our food or doing these things they do for us, and we're supposed to be protecting them, as you pointed out. Having said that, we have pump and dumps here in the United States that are fake companies and things of that nature. But what the American people aren't aware of, those people can go to jail when they're caught. Those people will pay a fine. Those people can be notionally held accountable. What investors here in the United States aren't aware of is that being audited by a top four auditor means nothing at all if it's in China. Because if that auditor is wrong, they have all kinds of disclaimers saying, hey, we're only giving you the information management's giving us. And management can lie, cheat, and steal and not go to jail and keep the money. Now, who here in the United States was aware of that?
When you say that in the investigations you guys did, 30 out of 30 companies were fraudulent, that's kind of breathtaking.
There are many, many more. There are hundreds. As it turned out, those are just the first 30 we looked at. And I will tell you, the first two critical reports we wrote, we'll put out this information for free. And investors will love us, and they'll come pay for our information, our due diligence. But investors basically chose to see us as short sellers anyway. Even though we said we didn't short it, and we didn't, if you're going to write negative information, you're short. And they weren't buying our research, and neither were the investment banks, who really should have been buying it. So from then on, we started shorting. when I call the investment banks or I talk to anybody or the auditors, or they take my calls now. I mean, we've made millions. And the reason the China hustle got made is because at some point I realized that the money that we're making comes from my neighbors and my family and fellow Americans, because they're not made whole once that fraud is exposed. So it's a binary proposition. You're short, you win, somebody loses. That somebody isn't the person committing fraud in China. That somebody is my family. And that's why we started lobbying Congress.
Coming up, Dan lobbies Congress for more financial oversight and protection for American investors. So what kind of reaction have you gotten so far?
It was very slow. I started in 2014 lobbying Congress, and it was a very tough thing for me to see as a Mr. Smith goes to Washington. There were some very intellectually challenged members of Congress where it came to finance, and they were asking me what they should do.
The truth is, you know a lot more about it than they do. It's not totally irrational to say to a guy who's spent years studying it, so how would you solve it?
I wasn't an expert on policy, though. You know, I could point out that, like, here's what you don't know. Even the members of Congress didn't know that it wasn't illegal for somebody to lie, cheat, and steal in China and not be held accountable here in the United States. But, you know, I, as an investor, wasn't aware of what the laws were, what the policies were, and things of that nature. I had to go back over the next year and become aware of policy and then come back and try to match my experience versus what the policy is versus what the policy could be. So I did end up doing that in 2015, and I started offering solutions. And one of the most basic solutions that I offered, I mean, obviously there's the nuclear option of delisting these companies, and everybody just kind of just sat back and said, oh, no, we'll never do that. I said, okay, well, if you're going to come at this from a perspective of buyer beware, then let's make people aware. On a pack of cigarettes, there's a warning label on there that says if you smoke these things, they may kill you. How about on a ticker symbol for a China-based stock, you have an asterisk with a drop-down box that would explain to people the lack of accountability versus a U.S. health stock, you know, from a U.S.-based company or European-based company. And I couldn't even get that done. And I thought that was pretty simple.
To go a step further, it seems to me, and I think you made an estimate that maybe as much as $14 billion has been lost in our pension and retirement funds by investing in these kind of fraudulent companies.
That's just what we exposed at my firm. It's a much bigger, bigger number. At my small firm, we exposed over $15 million, and, you know, from direct money raised from investors to market cap loss, it's hundreds of billions of dollars that has been lost. And what people don't realize now, this is so quintessential China. And when you're dealing with the Chinese outlook on any kind of strategy or situation. And they do consider finance warfare. They just do. It's a competition, right? So it is an unconventional financial warfare to them. In 2008, when you look at where we were during our financial crisis, China was largely, comparatively speaking, detached from our economy, which very much so helped them during our crisis. $100 billion of market cap on our U.S. exchanges is what I figured out that they, in my opinion, what they had here. Now the number, some 10-plus years later, is $1.3 trillion. So what they've said is, thank goodness we were not attached to the U.S. market during their crisis, but our crisis is coming. We are going to have a big problem. We have a banking crisis coming. They do. A real estate bubble coming, they do. They have civil unrest, because if they even start to grow at 2%, that's going to be a problem in that country, much less negative growth ever. So they've attached themselves to our market in a much bigger way, so that when their bubble bursts, we have to help them, because they've cost us that $1.3 trillion in pain. That doesn't even count the money invested through Hong Kong. which there's hundreds of billions of dollars through Morgan Stanley Private Equity and Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank, of pension money that are in these Asian funds investing through Hong Kong and China. And that doesn't count that the MSCI, the world's largest index, their emerging markets index, went from 25 to 40% Asia-weighted, bringing in the Shanghai Exchange and the Shenzhen Exchange, the most fraudulent markets in the world, to the MSCI index. So now you're talking about over $2 to $3 trillion that were attached to China when their bubble bursts.
So this is both money lost to American investors as well as money lost, for example, the pension funds who are providing the capital to the investors.
Well, this is in two different scenarios. One, there's a postmortem to be done over the last 10 years and say, this is the money lost. I mean, there's money that's been gained as well, right? So you can say people have invested in China and made money on the long side. So if you want to talk about the money lost over the last 10 years, we can just talk about direct fraud, and that's well over $100 billion. And then there's the bigger issue of the potential effect of their economy versus our economy, because we've allowed ourselves to get so entangled over the last 10 years that anything in a $2 to $3 trillion range where we have direct investment, I mean pension funds, regular people are invested in this way. I'm not talking about treasuries. I'm talking about regular investors and people, that it's a huge, huge effect on the entire country if we don't do something about it now.
And you think it'll get bigger?
It's getting bigger every day. But I mean, nothing's been done. It's still not illegal to steal from American investors.
Next, Dan explains what happened when he went to China to monitor these companies. Hi, this is Newt Gingrich. After I served as Speaker of the House, I opened my own business, Gingrich 360. As a small business owner, I am profit-focused, and budgeting income, staff, marketing, and sales is key to my success. As the adage goes, you get what you inspect, not what you expect. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. But the problem growing businesses have that keeps them from knowing their numbers is their hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, and so on. It's just a big, inefficient mess, taking up too much time and too many resources. And that hurts the bottom line. To solve this problem and streamline your books, look to NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform, giving you the visibility and control you need to grow. With NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, finance and accounting, orders, and HR instantly, right from your desktop or phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/newt. That's netsuite.com/newt to download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits. netsuite.com/newt.
You can't criticize companies in China. There's no such thing as freedom of speech. There's criminal defamation, not just civil defamation. There's criminal defamation. They put one of our investigators in jail for 2 years because we wrote a report. He didn't write it. He just reported back what he saw. But they couldn't get to us. So they picked him up, put him in jail for 2 years on criminal defamation. His trial took 15 minutes. And during the trial, the offended company, the attorney, was allowed to work with the prosecutor during the trial. It was a farce.
It's rather a different system, isn't it?
It definitely is a different system. There has to be justice reform. And that is the big mistake, is we allow them in the WTO with promises of reform. And if you don't have justice reform, then you're never going to have this kind of ability to invest in the number two economy in the world. They're not an emerging market anymore. You're number two economy in the world. and no justice. You can't change a way of life in that country without entirely changing the system, and even then it's going to take time. In China, in a communist country, it was a communist country. They were always hiding money. They needed to hide money. If you didn't hide money, the government took it. So they've got this whole outlook that maybe is changing a bit with a new generation, let's hope, but it was always about presenting three sets of books, right? You had the books you gave the government, the books you had for your business, and the books you showed your wife. That's the joke in China from the CEOs. It was always about corruption.
So if you weren't corrupt, you couldn't survive.
No, you could not. And what was very interesting, what's still the case in China, and China has this very circular outlook, right? Their family is a circle, and that's the strongest circle. And outside of that, their local community is a circle in their province and their country. And they will not break that circle, largely. So what I mean by that is when we've investigated companies in China that are fraudulently raising money here, a lot of the times the way this happened, because I say one of the frauds that we exposed was a large chicken farm operation, right? So, and that was $50 million. A Chinese chicken farmer doesn't wake up one day and know how to defraud the U.S. capital markets. They're taught how to do it by us. Make no mistake, we have traders among us for money. And they'll go to this operator in China and say, how big is your business? And they'll say, well, okay, imagine me holding my hands together small. It's this big. How big do you want it to be? And they'll say, well, you know, make it bigger, hold your hands out further, and say, okay, all you need to do is come with me to the United States and say your business is already this big. And then we're going to get you the money, and you'll have that money to make your business bigger. Nobody gets hurt, because you'll be that big in the end the way the American investors expect you to be, even though we're lying in the beginning. And that's how they kind of co-opt them. And you can't go to jail, and whatever happens, even if you get caught, it's not going to be a problem. The flip side to that is they're raising that money to make their business bigger. So they're going to hurt somebody in their local community that competes with them, right? They're going to get bigger. Their competition would get smaller, notionally thinking. If you go to that competition and you say, do you know what your competition is doing in the United States? They're lying, cheating, and stealing from American investors to make their company bigger and put you out of business. Why don't you work with us and come out publicly and talk about how they're lying? They will not do it. They would rather go out of business.
And is that because the state will punish them?
The community will punish them. They'll be a pariah in the community. You just don't do it. It's their own kind of omerta. I don't know. I mean, you would think that if Firestone is lying about some of their tires and pricing and rubber and things of that nature, that Goodyear would be happy to say, you can't do that, and publicly talk about that. That will not happen in China. They'll go out of business before they tell on one of their competitors.
What are you doing now? I understand you've created a new company.
We were put into an extraordinary situation about exposing corruption. This has become my life. I mean, for 15 years, I worked in the corporate world for a great American company, and I was very satisfied with that job, and they're good people that informed me in a lot of ways operationally. But in my investing experience, this is who I am. And I've really not found something more gratifying than fighting for the truth and hopefully having an effect and helping fellow Americans. Once you're brought over the line, brought over the wire, and you see from meeting with our counterparts how important it is for them to win, to it not to be a win-win situation, to be a they-win situation, you feel a call to action, at least I do. So this is important to me, and I started my own firm called Wolfpack Research, and that's kind of based on a joke of what people think short sellers are, right? They think we're some kind of wolf pack, which is fine because the ecosystem needs wolf packs to take down bad and dying businesses or keep that ecosystem strong and clear. So it's about keeping the financial ecosystem strong and clear.
Well, listen, I want to thank you. I think you are the kind of entrepreneur and the kind of citizen that has made this country unique. And I think with the courage and drive and determination of people like you, we'll continue that way. So I'm very grateful that you would spend time with us. And I think it'll be a further step towards educating the American people and through them, educating the Congress.
I hope so, too. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
When we come back, American investor Ray Snader shares his story of investing in the China Electric Motor Company. Public pension and retirement funds lost an estimated $14 billion to Chinese reverse merger frauds. Most of the people who lost money on their investments in these Chinese companies were average Americans saving for retirement. They looked at the financials in these companies and believed what they saw and thought they were making a solid investment. You're about to meet one investor who's going to tell you his story. Ray Snader, thanks for being on Newt's World. What first attracted you to invest in a Chinese company?
Well, you know, I was just looking around at options, and I thought China is a growing, robust economy. And my impression was this company had good reviews, that it looked like over the longer term it was going to be doing very well. That is the first Chinese company I had invested in. I'd always been investing in American and European companies, but then I had this opportunity and I thought, well, China is really growing. And my sister was teaching English at a teacher's college in China at the time, and I just became kind of interested in China and thought, well, I'll invest in that firm. And I did, thinking that everything I was reading was above board.
There was not just a Chinese company, but there were also a number of Americans involved as middlemen. Part of this was driven by Roth Capital issuing a buy recommendation. Can you explain first, how did you find Roth Capital? And had they been successful prior to this with their recommendations?
I had never been familiar with Roth Capital until I became involved with China Electric Motor. They are an organization that is hired by shady companies to promote their stock when they have no other way to promote it. I was not familiar with Roth Capital at all. Now, of course, I've learned a lot more. Often what happens is these organizations are contracted to promote the company, and the way they are paid is by stock in the company. And so they will get shares of the company for promoting the company, and then they turn around and sell those shares on the market, and that's how they get paid. They aren't paid dollars from the Chinese company. They're just paid with shares. And so I've learned somewhat more about Roth, and there are other similar organizations, and there are also accountants in the United States who work for and promote these companies with their fraudulent accounting practices.
The process that you just described, though, does sound like that would give them an incentive to find a company that's going to grow and survive, because their returns all in the stock of that company. So if the company collapses, they lose ground too.
No, they get shares in the company. They turn around and sell those shares on the open market when the company appears to be viable and is doing well. They don't wait until the company falls apart. They take their shares, put them on the market, sell them, get their money. And that's before the firm is discovered to be a shell company.
I see. So, in a sense, they want to churn what they're doing in order to be able to move the stock and do it before the company collapses.
Of course. They want out of the company because they know the company's going to collapse, so they sell their shares, pocket their money, and the rest of us are still holding the bag, so to speak.
Ray, how much money did you lose altogether, and how did that impact on your retirement savings?
Part of the problem was mine in that I ended up not staying as diversified as I should have. I moved quite a bit of my savings into China Electric Motor because they seemed to be doing well. The quarterly reports were coming out. The annual reports were coming out that things were looking very, very good. And the bottom line is, after it was all said and done, I had lost about $150,000 in China Electric Motor, which is a lot for me. You know, my wife and I don't have a lot of money. We're kind of poor folks who work all the time. And that came out of our retirement plan.
Wow. So that puts you back a considerable number of years then in your planning for being able to retire full time.
That's true. And what you might want to know, I'm 71 years old, and so I probably should be retired. I probably should be doing something else other than what I'm doing, but I'm still working a lot because, well, I just don't have the savings that I thought I would have at this point in my life.
Now, what happened to the company in China?
There was no company in China, as far as I can tell. All that I know was that there was a shell company that made it appear to be a company, China Electric Motor in China. Whoever was involved in that, and there were a number of different names, but I don't think we ever were able to get to them. But there was an investigation by the lawyers who filed a class action lawsuit, and they determined who it was that was putting out all of the fraudulent information that led to individuals investing in the shell company.
Were the Chinese themselves basically innocent, or were they going along with this shell game?
I'm sure that the Chinese individuals who were heading up this company were not innocent. They had a scam going, and what they did is they just hired American PR and accountants to promote their scheme. There was really no way for us to get to China, get into the pockets of the Chinese.
So, do we need to change our fundamental laws in that sense to be able to monitor them more carefully and to make them potentially collectible when they do things that are this clearly bad?
Yes, but I think going back one step further, before a Chinese company or any company is allowed to list its stock on an American stock exchange or available for Americans to invest in, there needs to be a vetting process. I think the Securities and Exchange Commission needs to make sure, is this in fact a valid company or no? Because if it's not a valid company, then it should not be made available to American investors.
Do you think, I mean, would you discourage people from investing in China, or would you argue that we should have our own government be much more aggressive? How would you stop the next cycle of people from going through this?
I would just suggest that American investors do much more investigation before they invest in Chinese companies, number one. But I still think the SEC should do more to protect the investor. I just don't think that firms that are non-existent, that are shell companies, should be allowed to promote their firm to investors when there's really nothing there to invest in. So I think it both calls for due diligence on the part of the investor, but I think the SEC needs to be more diligent also.
And that may require Congress to change the law some.
Maybe the SEC just needs to have more teeth so that it can go after and look at firms before they're listed on the stock exchanges.
You are very helpful, Wraith, and I think you help educate the country.
Well, thank you.
In my new book, Trump versus China, Facing America's Greatest Threat, I describe in detail the new era of competition with communist-ruled China that the United States now faces. It impacts every American, and it is important to understand and recognize how we got to where we are today, and what we must do as a country to survive. I encourage you to pick up a copy of Trump versus China, available October 22nd. Thank you to my guests, Dan David and Ray Snader. You can learn more about Chinese companies trading on U.S. stock exchanges and get a link to the documentary, The China Hustle, on our show page at newtsworld.com. Newt's World is produced by Westwood One. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers, and our producer is Garnsey Sloan. Our editor is Robert Borowski, and our researcher is Rachel Peterson. Our guest booker is Grace Davis. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Pendley. The music was composed by Joey Salvia. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360 and Westwood One's John Wardock and Robert Mathers. Please email me with your comments at newt@newtsworld.com. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. On the next episode of Newt's World, we're continuing our 3-part series on China, exploring what it's like to live in modern-day China in a communist totalitarian society. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World. The Westwood One Podcast Network.